الصلاة والسلام عليك.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، اللهم الصلوات وتم التسليمات على سيدنا محمد وصحبه أجمعين، وبعد. So we continue reading from كتاب تدريب السالك لقراءة أقرب المسالك في مذهب الإمام مالك رضي الله عنه، إمام دار الهجرة. And we have begun reading in the fiqh section, I believe, in the last session, and we have gone over the beginning of the book or the chapter of Tahara, or purification. And we have mentioned that purification is of two types. There is ritual purification, which is referred to as Taharat al-Hadath, which applies to the mukallaf, or the one held morally and ethically, legally responsible. And that's going to come in the form of either wudu or ghusl or tayammum, as will come to us later. Then there's also the physical purity or purification, taharat al-khabath, which is to be free from impurities deemed impure by the sharia, from one's body, from one's clothing, and from the place of prayer that one is going to pray. And we have begun, and we talked a little bit last week, or I went over the rules, generally speaking, about the types of water that will be used to purify. And then generally we say that it must be a water that is absolute, in the sense that it is not qualified by something. So not coconut water, not watermelon water, but water that either comes from the sky in the form of rain, hail, snow that has been melted, or water that naturally occurs on the earth's surface or underground, such as underground aquifers, well water, or even the water of ponds, lakes, rivers, oceans, and so forth. And then we talked a little bit about some of the questions people might have about that, particularly if the water has been affected by something foreign to it, whether if that thing is najas, if it's considered to be impure, or if it's considered to be pure, what are the effects, and so forth. So not to rehash that again, but that's kind of where we left off. And now we move on to the section dealing with the things that are considered pure and things that are considered impure. So in the previous section, we just talked in generally about pure and impure, tahar and najas, but we didn't describe what those things actually are. So in this section, he does that. So he says, rahimahullah, fasl fi dayan al-tahir wa najis. So chapter or section, rather, dealing with the tahir, that which is considered pure, and that which is considered impure. Again, this is a sharia stipulation, not something that we may be discussed by something or maybe not discussed by something, but that's not the consideration. Rather, the consideration is what the sharia considers to be pure or impure. So it begins by saying, كل مسكرين من المائعات نجس. Every intoxicating liquid is considered to be impure or najis. What is the definition of intoxication or muskir here? Dabdir, and in the Hashiyah al-Sawi, he says that everything, ma yughayyibu al-aql, ma tarab wa nashwa, that which clouds the intellect, or removes intellect is the word that he uses, but here it means that you have a diminished capacity to make decisions based upon intoxication. So anything that intoxicates and also has associated with it, tarab wa nashwa. And there's also a feeling, a pleasurable feeling that goes along with it. Tarab wa nashwa, like, you know, kind of a upper or a happiness, or, you know, I would say lowering of inhibitions. So that would be considered to be muskir, intoxicating. There are other types of substances that can have an effect on the mind, and they could be ones, for example, that not just cloud the intellect or rob the intellect, but also the senses of the body. In other words, they'll render you unconscious and unable to feel anything with your body. So like anesthesia is something that's mughayyib, right? You're in a complete state of unawareness, both in terms of your mind and in terms of your senses, your five senses, your bodily senses, as if you're not there. And then there are some that only cloud the intellect without a sense of tarab and nashwa, without a sense of kind of lowering of inhibitions and so forth, and some of the illegal, because some places are not legal anymore, but some of the drugs such as marijuana and so forth would be considered to be in that category. But in order for the substance to be considered najas, it must be liquid and it must be intoxicating. So that's separate from the ruling of whether you can actually ingest it or not. That's something else. Here we're talking about the substance itself. If it gets on you, if it gets on your person, if it gets on your clothing, if it gets on the place of prayer, is that considered to be najas? So anything that's intoxicating, and that would include all sort of fermented sort of alcohol drinks, whether they come from grapes in the form of wine, whether they come from barley and so forth, and in terms of beer, vodka, any hard alcohol, scotch, so forth, whiskey, all of those things would be considered to be najas in their liquid form. In their solid form, it's not the same ruling. Why? Because it's considered, if they were to become solid, then the najasa doesn't transfer, right? It's only when they're liquid form that it can transfer. But if it comes into contact with you, it doesn't transfer. So they say, الحكم لا ينتقل, just because you touch something najas, but something of that thing has to come on. And that's also a popular misconception as well, that if you touch something that's najasa, right, even if someone is changing the diaper of their child or something like that, if you come into contact with the baby but nothing gets on you, right, of the najasa, then you don't have to do anything. So it's not just merely by coming into contact, but there has to be a transference of that najasa. So كل مسكر من المائعات نجس. All liquid forms are considered of intoxicating. The substance is intoxicating of itself is considered to be najas. ومن فصل من أجزاء البري الذي له نفس سائلة قبل ذكاته إلى العرق والمقاط والدمع والريق or لعاب, same word. That which has been separated from a land animal that has a circulatory system before it is slaughtered. إلا العرق والمخاط والدمع والريق, except for sweat and mucus and tears and saliva. So what's that separated, like a body part? If it's like a goat or something and it's still alive, لقدر الله, the horn or something like this. So anything like that, that becomes separated from these animals while they're still alive and before it's slaughtered, then this is considered to be najasa. And that also would include their urine and their feces, except the exceptions that can come later. And except, in terms of all animals, it's sweat, it's mucus, its tears and its saliva, including that of the dog and of the pig. So in the Maliki school, unlike the other schools, the saliva, the sweat or perspiration, the mucus, and the tears of a dog or a pig or any other land animal for that matter, is considered to be tahir. It's considered to be pure. So if it gets on you, if you know you're walking around and the dog comes and licks you and so forth, the saliva itself is not considered to be najas, according to Imam Malik, unlike some of the other schools. And here he qualifies it by saying one that has a circulatory system. So that would be animals, including reptiles and including mammals, but animals that like insects, which would include the scorpion, beetles, ants, and so forth, they're not considered to be najas if like the beetle loses one of its antennas or something like that, and whatever may come on you, then this is not considered to be najas. Only those that have, here he says, nafsun sa'ila aw ma tahulluhu al-haya, in other words, there's blood flowing through it, is the criteria. And he said, land animal. So what about animals of the sea? The Prophet ﷺ said, هُوَ الْحِلُّ مَيْتَتُهُ, right? It is that which even the dead of it is considered to be halal. So that meat in halal to eat. So that anything that comes from the sea, that lives most of its life in the sea, and with the definition being that it, you know, it's born in the sea and it lives its life in the sea. So that would include all species of fish, whales, dolphin, and even crustaceans would come under that category, like shrimp, lobster, crab. Unlike some other schools, like the Hanafi school, which have a different opinion about that. But for the Maliki school, those things are halal to eat, and their dead are not considered to be najasa, not considered to be najas or impure. وَإِذَا مَاتْ فَجَمِيعُ أَجْزَائِهِ نَجِسَةً إِلَّا الشَّعْرَ وَالْوَبَرَ وَالصُّوفَ وَزَغَبِ الْرِّيشِ إِنْ جُزَّتْ مِنْهُ حَيًّا أَوْ مَيْتًا. However, if this animal dies, right, assuming that it hasn't been slaughtered properly, in terms of animals that are halal to eat, but any animal that dies, then all of its parts are considered to be najasa, are considered to be impure, except for its hair, wabar, which would be like the type of fur or hair that would be on a camel, for example, wussuf, wool, wazakhab al-rish, which would be the feathers. In other words, you have the feather like this that has the quill, and then on either side you have the feathers, so not the quill part, but the feathers themselves are considered to be tahir. In juzat minhu hayyan aw mayta. So those last things that I mentioned, which would be hair and fur, and not the one attached to the skin, we're talking about hair that falls out, to be clear. Wool, if you shear a sheep, whether while it was alive or while it was dead, even if it died of natural causes, you didn't slaughter it, but you sheared the wool is considered to be tahir. In juzat minhu hayyan aw mayta. Right, if it was taken or cut off, the hair was cut or the wool was sheared, whether it was done while it was alive or if it was dead. Again, the criteria being la tahullu al-hayah, there's no blood circulating, right, in hair or wool or wabar, camel hair or anything of the like. So in that case, it's not considered to be najas. وَمِنَ النَّجَسِ السَّوْدَاءُ وَالْقَيْحُ وَالصَّدِيدُ. These are internal body fluids from amongst the najas. Sawda, it's blood, but it's kind of like a very dark blood that comes from the ma'ida, from kind of the lower stomach. وَالْقَيْحُ وَالصَّدِيدُ, pus, and lower type of pus or vomit also that has been changed. All of these things would also consider to be najas if they are expectorated from any animal, including human beings. والدم ولو من سمك أو ذباب أو قمل. Also blood, even if it's from a fish. In other words, not the blood that remains within the circulatory system. Once an animal is slaughtered, right, there's the blood that comes out, right? And the blood is drained. So that blood that is drained from the cow or the sheep or the camel or the goat, that one slaughters, all of that blood is najas. However, the blood that remains within the animal, right, within the veins, you know, and the arteries that still remain with the animal, this is not considered to be najasa. So it's called the dam al-masfuh in other books. Dam al-masfuh, you know, the one that is flowing upon slaughter. And so even if a whale or a large sea animal like a dolphin, all that blood that comes out of it, if it was slaughtered in this way and the blood was flowing rather than it was found dead, then all of that blood would be considered to be najasa. أو ذباب أو قمل. He says, or a fly or lice. Those last two, there's some khilaf, especially the lice, difference of opinion. Some said it was considered to be najasa. Others said no, because it's not its own blood. It's blood that it gets from people. But the safer side would be also that if it's a large amount of blood, and we'll get to the section about ma'fu'at in the next section, things that are considered to be pardoned that normally would come under najasa, but we'll find that a small amount of blood, what's considered, they say, a dirham al-baghali, which is maybe a quarter dollar. We don't have quarter dollars anymore, but it's about that big. That much would be considered pardoned. So if you had that minimum small amount of blood upon your person, then even though technically it's najasa, it's pardoned, and you can still pray with that amount on you. وَالْمَذْيُ وَالْوَجْيُ وَالْمَنِيُّ مِنْ كُلِّ حَيَوَانٍ. Here are other bodily fluids. Al-madhi is considered to be pre-seminal fluid, and the fuqaha describe it as coming either from a male or a female, and that's right before ejaculation. So that's considered to be najasa. So is al-wadi, and wadi, it happens usually in males, and it's a type of excretion that can come following urine, and usually it's a sign of sickness. Wal-mani, which is semen or sexual fluid from male or female, is considered to be najasa. So that from all animals is considered to be najasa. It's considered to be ritually impure and would have to be removed from one's person before they would pray. Wal-bawlu wal-gha'itu min muharramin kal-himar aw makruhin kal-hir ومن المباح أن يستعمل النجاسة ولو ظننا. So urine and feces, from that which is illicit to eat from, its meat. So he gives the example here of the donkey. Also included in that would be the horse, the dog. أو مكروه كالهير, or one that there's a difference of opinion about it, or considered to be makruh, like a cat and other cat-like animals, sabah, lions and so forth. The mashhur is that these things are haram to eat. But since there is a khilaf, there's a slight difference of opinion, then in terms of its feces and urine being tahir, then we consider it to be najas. We consider it to be impure. So the only animals are the ones where there's consensus we're allowed to eat them. So that would be Al-Asnaf al-Arba, as mentioned in the Quran, or Thamaniyata Azwaj. So it'd be, you know, the male and female from goat and sheep, male and female from cows, and that's all derivatives of cows, oxen and water buffalo and so forth. All derivatives of camels, male and female. Also included that would be chicken and duck and so forth. So their urine and their feces is considered to be tahir, is considered to be pure. That also is a little slightly different than some of the other schools of thought. With one exception, and the exception being that if it's known to be eating najasa, this animal, then we consider its urine and feces to be najas, to also be impure. So there are some animals that will eat anything, like a goat. Sheep otherwise don't really do that. Sheep will want to graze on grass. Goats, they're called jallala, right? They go, well, they'll go. Chickens will also do the same thing. So here he said, in istaman najasata walal dhannan, right? If it's a type of animal where you have a presumption that if it were to roam in an area where it has access to eating things that are najasa, then you have to assume that it's doing that. And then based upon that assumption, you'd have to also assume that its urine and its feces are also considered to be najasa. Unlike sheep, right? If it had access to najasa, then you'd have to have some sort of verification that it was doing that, because sheep don't normally do that. They don't normally eat from things that are najasa, unlike the goat and chicken. They're still halal to eat, even if they're eating najasa. But not in this book, but in Aqrab al-Masalik, it says then it's recommended that you go through a period of 2 weeks where you prohibit the animal from eating anything najasa and only to eat pure things. And then it's recommended after that, if you want to slaughter it, to slaughter it to eat it. So clearly there's this kind of precaution about an animal eating things that are considered to be impure, and it's better to avoid eating from it, though it's still halal if you slaughter it. However, it's better to wait the 2 weeks and have it eat from something that is pure. وَمِنَ الْآدِمِ إِلَّا الْأَنْبِيَاءِ. So all the things that we just mentioned, namely urine and feces, For human beings, they're also considered to be najasa, with one exception, except for the prophets. Prophets and messengers, anything that comes from them is considered to be tahir and not najasa. They're the exception. وَلَبْنِ الْمُحَرَّمِ وَالْمُتَعَفِّنُ مِنَ الْبَيْتِ والقيء والقلص وفي تغيرهما بحمودة خلاف ومع ذا المذكروت فهو طاهر. As now he's going on to milk. So the milk of al-muharram, in other words, that which is haram to eat. So that would be again the donkey, the bears, crocodile, whatever it might be, things that are generally haram to eat. Then we would consider its leban or its milk also to be najasa. Things that then are halal to eat, then their milk is considered to be pure. So again, the eight categories we talked about earlier. So the goats, the sheep, the camels, the cows. وَالْمُتَعَفِّنُ مِنَ الْبَيْضِ. Eggs are obviously considered to be halal, except that which has become rotten, a rotten egg. In other words, where the egg fetus or embryo has partially formed and then it mixed with blood. Then that would be considered a rotten egg, and that would be considered to be najasa. Well, qay, which is vomit, here they say if it is changed from the original form of the food. In other words, there's some sort of digestive process that it underwent, and then one were to vomit it, then it would be considered to be najasa. Otherwise, if your pepperoni pizza came out the same way that you had ingested it, then it's not considered to be najasa. Might be a good idea to kind of wash up anyway, but going by the rules of the madhab, that's not considered to be najasa because it's unchanged from the way that it came out. وَالْقَلَسْ وَفِي تَغَيْرِهُمَا. Qalas also is a type of vomit, but comes from deeper from within the stomach, or pus mixed with it. Same ruling. وَفِي تَغَيُّرِهُمَا بِحُمُودَةٍ خِلَافٍ. Right here he says it's khilaf, if it's changed from its original state or not. But the mashhur, or the dominant opinion, is if it's changed, then it's najasa. If it's not changed from its original state, then it's not considered to be najasa, it's considered to be pure. وَمَا عَذَا الْمَذْكُورَاتِ فَهُوَ طَاهِرٍ. And then everything besides what has been mentioned is considered to be ritually pure, which is most things after that. So, generally speaking, it's going to be فضلات الحيوانات. In terms of najasa, we're talking really about things that come from animals and human beings, and mostly that which they secrete or defecate. And then we read some about the exceptions, the main exception being animals that are unlawful to eat. As we said, cows, goats, camels, sheep, and anything that is not from the private part or the anus of an animal. So that would include things like its saliva, its tears, its mucus, and its sweat or perspiration from any animal while alive is considered to be tahir. All of that is considered to be tahir. So as we said, any animal that comes and licks you or cries on you or tears upon you, all of those things are considered to be tahir. And then the hair that comes off of these animals as well, if it's hair that fell out and it's not connected to the skin, right, where the blood runs through it, all that is considered to be tahir too. So if you have a cat at home and you have cat hair, the cat hair is not considered to be najasa. It's considered to be pure. So there's no issue with that. If you come into contact regularly with a dog and he licks you all the time, again, that's no issue for the manikia. Alhamdulillah. We'll leave it at that. So the next section. There's gonna be a lot of angry Shafis now at me, but it is what it is. Fasl fi dhikr al-ma'fuwat. So this section is dealing, as I said earlier, with al-ma'fuwat, al-ma'fu. Is that min al-afu, that which is pardoned, so normally considered to be najasa, but in this case there are exceptions. And just like when we saw the exceptions to water, and we talked about if there are things that normally would render water impure, but they are difficult to avoid, So like water that runs over a stream and you have sort of zinc deposits and minerals and things that may color change the color of it, then this doesn't affect the purity of the water. So here also there's going to be certain things that don't affect the purity of something that normally would be considered impure. So he says, يُعْفَى عَلَى قَدْرِ دِرْهَمٍ مِنْ دَمٍ أَوْ قَيْحٍ أَوْ صَدِيدٍ أَوْ أَثَرِ الذُّبَابِ الْوَاقَعَ عَلَى الْبَدَنِ وَالثَّوْبِ مِنَ النَّجَاسَةِ. So he says it is pardoned, in other words, not considered to be najasa, like you get a dispensation. Ala qadri dirham, the size of a dirham. So it doesn't mean a silver coin dirham. He's referring to a dirham al-baghali. And dirham al-baghali, or the mule's dirham, and you find this in donkeys too. If you look at the back of the leg, the four legs of a donkey or a mule, you'll find this sort of discoloration. As I said, is about maybe that big, like a quarter dollar size. And they say that is about the amount that will be not considered to be najas if it comes upon you. So, but only certain substances, min dam, aw qayh aw sadid, right? So blood or pus or another, sadid is also a type of pus that comes from the body. So things that are kind of blood, but a little bit changed from blood. أو أثر الذباب, or blood that maybe came from a flatted, a swatted fly. الواقع على البدن والثوب من النجاسة, something either on your body or on your clothing. So it need not be in one place. It could be spread out, but if you were to add them all up, they would come out to something smaller than this. So that also includes your own blood. So something that, you know, like a cut and some of it got on your clothing and you don't have change of clothes and you can't wash it immediately, then something that's kind of small would not be considered a problem, an issue to pray with that on your body or on your clothing. So that's the first ma'fu, the first sort of dispensation or pardonable thing. وَعَنِ السَّلَسِ إِنْ لَازَمَ كُلَّ يَوْمٍ وَلَوْ قَطْرَهُ. So salas comes in two sections. Here is when we're first encountering it. Salas means incontinence. And that could mean incontinence of any sort of secretion. So it could be urine, it could be other liquid secretions, vaginal discharge, all of that comes under salas. So here we're not talking about the wudu issue. That comes later. We'll cover that when it comes. Here we're talking about the idea of the najasa of the substance. Do I have to have a change of clothes or can I pray with it? So forth. So, عَنِ السَّلَسِ إِنْ لَازَمَ كُلَّ يَوْمٍ وَلَوْ قَطْرًا. If it's something that happens daily, here he says daily, كُلَّ يَوْمٍ وَلَوْ قَطْرًا, even one drop, then one is not required to change one's underwear or clothing as a result. So that's مِنَ الْمَعْفُوَاتِ. So whether someone has an incontinence of urine or vaginal discharge or whatever it might be, then they are not required to change their clothes every day, because if they get it every day, because it would be considered a type of hardship. So again, the general fiqh principle being applied here, as we saw in terms of the water that you know, runs over streams and in our pipes that have fluoride and chlorine treatment, is something that is very difficult to avoid, then we can expect a type of dispensation. وَمَا جَعَلَ عَلَيْكُمْ فِي الدِّينِ مِنْ حَرَجٍ, right? The Quranic principle, we did not put anything in the deen that was there as an undue hardship. وَأَثَرُ الْجُرُوحِ وَالْقُرُوحِ وَالْدَمَامِلِ إِلَّا مِنْ دُمَّلٍ وَاحِدٍ فُجِّرَ اِخْتِيَارًا. So أَثَرُ الْجُرُوحِ وَالْقُرُوحِ وَالْدَمَامِلِ مِنَ الدُّمَّلِ. So anything that is a wound or an open wound that has some pus in it, والدمامل, right, that comes from like a sore on your body, like a sore that may have maybe infected and it has pus in it. إلا من دمل واحد فجر اختيارا. So, you know, in other words, he's talking about things that may be oozing out of it. And for many people, that's unimaginable. How can one continue in such a state? But remember, the fiqh is covering everybody. And so there are people who are living with this, who are living with these type of like bed sores or open sores, and you might have, you know, might be a chronic condition that's difficult to contend with. So if there's the pus oozing out of it, right, even if it's more than a dirham, even more than this amount, then that's considered to be ma'fu, something that they don't have to worry about, because it would be an undue hardship otherwise. إِلَّا مِن دُمَّنٍ وَاحِدٍ فُجِّرَ اخْتِيَارًا, except if someone actually pokes it, right, deliberately pokes it, and in fajr, right, he actually says explodes, but he means, you know, then it came out all over the place, then that would be an exception, because that you can avoid. However, things that, you know, that are hard to avoid, as in these type of sores that one may have, then it's ma'ful. Ikhtiyar means purposefully, yeah. They did it on purpose, yeah. They did it on purpose. وكل ما يعصر الاحتراز منه كثوب مرضعة وزبال وجزار. And then he says the principle that I just mentioned, and everything that is difficult to avoid, such as the clothing of a nursing mother, right? The child may, everyone who's nursed a baby knows that the child kind of throws up a lot, and after you feed them, it doesn't take much time, and you know they have these, you know, spots all over the place. Was a balin, and someone who works in cleaning rubbish. Wajazar, and someone works in an abattoir or a slaughterhouse. There'll be a lot of blood. So it's recommended for these three categories for them to actually have a change of clothes. However, not everybody has a change of clothes, right? Not everybody's in a position where they that's easy for them to do. So there's an exception to these type of people, right? Where it's something that there's a priority that's taking place in terms of a murdi'ah, in terms of a nursing mother. She's fulfilling what's an obligation to feed her child. And then the jazar and the zabel, the person who, sanitation person who cleans rubbish, and the one who slaughters animals, are also fulfilling an obligation, a communal one. And so if they don't have the means by which to have another change of clothes handy at the time, then we tell them, you still pray, though it's better for you to have a change of clothing. وما يصيب من الطريق من الطين وماء بسبب مطر أو رش إذا اختلط بنجاسة إلا إذا غلبت أو أصاب عينها. And here he says that which you may pick up on the road or walking around من الطريق من الطين وماء, from mud, right, that came about as of you know, rain or you know, like a spillage. إِذَا اخْتَلَطَ بِنَجَاسَةٍ, right, if it's mixed with najasa. So in many rural villages and areas, for example, this may not be the case for people living in cities, but in rural areas where you have a lot of traffic from horses and other animals whose fadalat, whose feces is considered to be najasa, and then the road itself is muddy, and then when it rains, those things get mixed up. So you can't actually tell, you know, where's the najasa and where is the mud, and what's tahir and what's clean and what's not. So someone who's walking around in that and they don't have a choice, then we say that atraf al-thawb, you know, then the shoes, or you know, that which, you know, trails from their clothing, if it comes up against this and picks some of it up, then it's considered to be ma'fu. It's considered to be a dispensation, and they need not worry about things like that. Again, because the general principle is that that would be something that would be unduly difficult to avoid. In Aqrab al-Masalik, he also mentions حَتَّ مِنْ رِجْلِ الْفَقِيرِ. So even a destitute person doesn't even have shoes, and they have to walk around barefoot. So their feet would be included in that exception. If they're walking around and they don't have a choice, and they walk on it and it gets on them. Which is kind of a beautiful thing, actually, that they even, you know, they're considering everybody's situation. And so depending upon your situation and how difficult it is for you, the idea is taysir and tasir, right? Facilitation and making easy, and allowing people to practice their deen and still go on and living the particular life that they have to live. Right, what would it be like if we told someone, well, you know, you're walking on the Jasa a lot. I think every time you have to go wash that off, or you have to, you know, procure a pair of shoes that you can take on and off. And perhaps people don't have the means to do that. So it's considerate of everybody's had, of everybody's state. He has one exception. إِلَّا إِذَا غَلَبَتْ أَوْ أَصَابَ عَيْنَهَا. Right? The exception being, إِلَّا إِذَا غَلَبَتْ. Except if we know for certain that the najasa that's mixed with the mud, there's more najasa than mud. Like in a horse's pen, for example, where it rains and it's open. And we know the horses are, you know, doing their thing inside there. And you walk in there. Then it's pretty certain that there's a lot of horse manure all over the place. And even if it got mixed with the mud, you're certain that in almost in every part of the area of the mud, there's going to be some najasa in it. So that would be an exception. You should clean that off. أو أصاب عينها. Or if you're certain that you actually got the najasa itself, right? You walked into it and you're certain it's not just mud and maybe mixed, but it's clear that it's something that's najasa from an animal. Then in this case, that you would have to remove that. But otherwise, if you can't tell, as you said earlier, then this would be considered dispensation. ويطهر متنجس إذا غسل بطهور دون نية وعصر إذا انفصل الماء طاهرا. So he doesn't spend a lot of time on how to clean up najasa. He kind of just has one line here in أقرب المسالك. It goes into much more detail. But basically, يطهر متنجس. If you have something here, it's referring to an article of clothing. If it's your body, you're washing it off, basically. However, it's an article of clothing. يطهر متنجس إذا غسل بطهور. First thing, you have to prepare or have ready water that is purifying of itself, just like the same for wudu. That's number one. دون نيتين. So you don't have an intention, oh, I'm cleaning the najasa. It's enough that you clean it off. It's not an act of worship per se that it requires a niyya, an intention, but the prayer does require that you clean it off. وعصرين. So you don't necessarily have to, you know, try to like rinse it out. But the sign, إِذَا انْفَصَلَ الْمَاءُ طَاهِرًا. How do you know that you've cleaned it well enough? When you rinse it and the water that comes out from the rinse is pure in of itself. There's no more najasa in it. That means عَيْنِ النَّجَاسَ, the actual stain may remain. However, if you have washed it well enough that when you rinse it out, the water droplets that come from it are pure in of themselves, even though the stain remains, then the item is considered to be tahir and you can wear it for prayer in that case. That's in terms of articles of clothing. So move on to the next section. Here dealing with al-awani. Those things that are made of gold and silver, and what is the level of lawfulness in terms of using them. And the Malikiya put this section along with the section about Tahir al-Najas and Ma'fuwat, because it kind of goes along with things that are exceptions. So generally speaking, gold and silver are items of currency, and they have remained till this day to be things that are assigned value in of themselves. In other words, you can use them to exchange for goods and services. So you can get goods and services either by exchanging other goods and services for them, bartering basically, or what we call money or currency that come in the form of gold and silver. And up until fairly recently, 1975, the dollar was on a gold standard. So for every US dollar, there was gold to back it up at Fort Knox. That's no longer the case. But now we use these debt instruments that are issued by banks, namely monetary currency, that take the place of gold and silver. However, gold and silver still remain of intrinsic value. So there's still a worldwide gold market and there's a worldwide silver market, and they're traded openly in bourses and in markets, and they retain that value. So the ruling still remains that, generally speaking, gold and silver, the idea behind it is to circulate and not to keep it, what's called ihtikar. Because there's only a finite amount of gold and silver in the world. So if people were to build their staircases and their toilets and their whatever else out of gold, then that's kind of removing what should be out in the market to be traded. So generally speaking, there's going to be some exceptions to this. So he says, يحرم على المكلف استعمال أواني الذهب والفضة. So it is impermissible for the mukallaf, so both man and female, to use vases, awani or receptacle. Awani is any receptacle, like dishes, vase, bowls, utensils, forks, spoons, so forth. Al-dhahab wal-fidda, that are made from gold and silver. Gold-plated, silver-plated, there's some tafsir about that. There's some exception to that ruling. But things that are purely made of gold or primarily silver, the thing itself, not just plated, then this is going to be considered to be haram to even have such a thing. وعلى الذكر خاصة ما حلي بأحدهما لبسا أو استعمالا ولو آلة حرب إلا المصحف والسيف والسن والأنف والخاتم من الفضة إن اتحد ولم يزد على درهمين. Specifically to males, anything that has been adorned with either one of them, gold or silver, right? Anything adorned with gold or silver, articles of clothing, things that are on your person, so forth. Lipsan أو استعمالا, something to wear or even to use. ولو آلت حرب, even if it's like a weapon, like a sword or a dagger. With the exceptions of إلا المصحف. So the Quran could be, have some gold sort of adornment to it. Was safe, and the sword, if it's actually used in that sense, not something that's hanging on the wall, but actually used in that way. Was sin. Gold teeth, like false teeth. People used to use gold because it was something that lasted a long time. No one has gold anymore, but back when they were using that, gold was used as a replacement for a tooth. So that was an exception. Well, anf, and a gold nose as well. That was also used in the middle centuries as well. People lost a nose, but a gold replacement. So gold and silver teeth and filling, and silver, I believe, was used for fillings and gold as well, not so long ago. It was only maybe several decades ago that stopped happening. Wal khatam, and the ring, this is, we're talking about males now, min al fidda in ittahad. So the exception for males in terms of jewelry then, really the only thing that can wear in jewelry is a single silver ring. That's what it means, in ittahad. A single silver ring, and it does not weigh more than 2 silver coins, which is about 2.5 grams weight. So something like this, right? It's a silver ring, so not including the al-fas, which is the stone that's put in it, but the silver surrounding it should be a single ring, and it should not weigh more than 2.5 grams. Otherwise, it's considered to be above the limit considered for men. So for men, generally speaking, bracelets, necklaces, any other sort of jewelry is verboten, except for the silver ring. ويجوز للمرأة لبس الحلي ولو نعلا لا استعمالا كمرود وسرير. So for the woman, she's allowed to use الحلي, which is يشمل الذهب والفضة, يعني gold and silver. So here, استعمال means to use it, not just to wear it, like to have items that are gold. So she's allowed to have that, even shoes, if she's going to wear it. I don't know anyone who's going to get gold shoes for their wife, but you know, let's just say that someone had the means to do that, or some sort of gold lettering or adornment with it. لا استعمال كمرود وسرير, but not something to be used. So not a pure gold pen, and not a gold bed. Gold framed bed? No. Gold shoes? Okay. So something that she wears, is fine, but not something that is for use, like she's going to sleep on it or write with it and so forth. ويجوز لها لبس الحريري واستعماله. And for the woman, it's also halal or permissible to use silk, here pure silk, to wear it and to use it. So silk sheets, right? Silk curtains, so forth. Something she's going to lie on, all that is fine in terms for the woman. She could use the silk. ويحرم على الذكر البالغ لبسه واستعماله. So for the male, however, it's impermissible to wear pure silk or to use pure silk. So to have like silk sheets. For the male, if he's by himself, don't use that. If, however, it's the female or the wife and they're using it together, then that's okay. But if she gets up and he's sitting there by himself on his silk lined bed, then he has to get up because she's not sitting there with him. So if you're gonna have silk sheets, then you know, make sure that the woman of the house is sitting there with you. Otherwise, get up and leave the silk sheets. So that covers ذهب وفضة, فضة, gold and silver, as well as the silk sheets. And the next section goes on to talk about موجبات الوضوء, or the things that necessitate one to have to renew their wudu, or the things that nullify one's ritual purity. And in the next session, inshallah, we'll begin with that. Bismillah ta'ala, wallahu a'la wa a'lam, walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Ya Rasulallah.